listening to Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, on the second Tuesday of every month at 4:30. You'll hear people here from all walks of life give their personal perspective on land issues and tell thought-provoking stories about our sense of place on Mother Earth. Today, we're very lucky to have two local artists in the studio with us, Mary Noon and Fred Haberlin. Welcome, Mary and Fred. I can't remember how long it's been since I've known you guys, both of you, and it's been a privilege. I'll start here with an introduction for Mary and say a few things about you and your paintings. First of all, you and your husband, Bob, started Summer of Jazz a number of years ago. What year was that?
1985.
I just moved here in 1984, and I remember that created a lasting impression on me. And it lasted just till a few years ago.
Till 2010.
But they have created not a replacement exactly, but a show that does feature music. So that's good that your legacy's been carried on.
Yes, the Arts Council's keeping it going.
That's a good thing. And you paint the most beautiful landscapes. The ones I remember the most are of Mount Sopris. And the other day I was in a friend's kitchen and looked over at the calendar, and lo and behold, there was your work on the calendar. And, I saw your website. It made me chuckle a little. It said, Mary is creating new and exciting floral paintings, and you're creating them when it's safe to paint outside again. And I thought that was good because we've had so much rain lately.
I'm itching to get outside.
I'm going camping this weekend myself. Just if you want to see more of Mary's work there, just Google her name, put artist Mary Noon, and you'll find her work there and how to contact her. And then Fred, or Lightning Heart, as many of us know you by, you're a public artist whose scale is usually a bit larger than Mary's. And I've seen your big murals at the top of the tram on the side of the old CMC building in Glenwood Springs, and in downtown Carbondale here on one of the buildings. But my all-time favorite is in the San Luis Valley of the Sandhill Crane on a silo off U.S. 285 near San Antonito, Colorado. And have a list here with me of all of your 136 murals, counting your first one in Oracle, Arizona in 1977. What an amazing record to have more murals completed by one artist than any other artist in the United States.
That's an amazing thing. I didn't know that.
It makes me go, wow, that is impressive. Public art at its best. But I want to start with the ladies first. So, Mary, I'm hoping that both of you might today inspire someone listening who might be interested in painting landscapes but just doesn't have that desire yet or passion to get started. So, Mary, what got you into painting landscapes in the first place? I know you paint other things.
I prefer landscapes. I prefer to paint outside, and I never, in the summer, my car is full of my paint, and I've got the back, I've got my chair, I got my water, I got the whole thing, and I just pop up, and there I am. Because this time of year, it's so hard when the weather changes so fast, and you're out there trying, and the wind comes, and the paint goes flying, and it's just, I can't wait for probably this week it's good. But I grew up in eastern Missouri, right on the Missouri River, on an 800-acre farm. And it was so cool. From my house, you could see seven layers of hills that went off to the Missouri River. And I always loved that idea that it was very geometric. And when I look at the landscape, I like to see it in very geometric forms. And then just, I love to add the color. It's just, you know, to me, it's just, I'd love to be outside. I love nothing more than that.
Your colors are just—I want to use the word pure. They just come; they jump out at you. And what causes that? How do you do that?
That's what I see.
All right, cool. That's important, as an artist, isn't it?
Well, I like the juxtaposition of colors. When you put two colors next to each other that aren't supposed to be, they really pop at you, and it makes your eyeballs go crazy. And I like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely affects me, and that's what art should do. Well, Fred, let me ask you, your first question is, where in the world did you get the name Lightning Heart?
Well, that's from the Yaqui tribe down in the Sonoran Desert. I just got back from my annual pilgrimage. This is my 45th year with the Yaquis at their spring ceremonies.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I have a feeling that inspires you as well to do what you do.
Well, I grew up on a ranch in the South San Juan Wilderness, and it was 15 miles to the closest town, and it was an all Hispanic and Native American town. And because of my foster brother, who was half Navajo, we got taken into the Native American church over to Arroyo Hondo and Taos when we were right out of high school. And that Native point of view, that connection to the land, always made so much sense to me because I grew up out in it all the time.
What does it mean to grow up like that out in nature? Because so many kids today especially rather play their games than go outside. There's even a fellow who coined a term deficit, the nature deficit, I think
right,
it was. So
right.
So what? Tell us what that's like for you.
Well, for me, one of the reasons I do the kind of public art I do is to remind people of what's best about where they live. And usually there's some wonderful thing in the land where we all live, you know, that if you stop to remember, oh gosh, we live in a magical good place. So even on a busy day, you can look up and remember, gosh, you know, we live in a magical and wonderful place.
That's pretty easy around
reminder,
here.
Yeah, it is easy around
is
here, isn't
what's
it?
What's really important, you know?
Right.
And since I was always in it, you know, it was what I had to present. I thought it'd be a cowboy artist or a wildlife artist, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll ask you the same question I asked Mary. How does your passion for the land, how does it influence your painting?
Well, I've seen so much change across the West. You know, I've been camping and traveling and painting, exploring, and all these last years. And since I was 30 years old, I'm 71, the West has changed so much in the last 40 years. It's remarkable. And it's important to me to celebrate the beauty of where we live, but also to remind us all the time of the magic and power of our connection to the land and where we live. That's very important.
It is for lots of us, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's what motivates us and keeps us going. Mary, on your website, it says, Mary Noon, Colorado landscape artist. So let me ask you, how does your passion for the land that we are fortunate enough to live in, specifically, how does the passion for our land influence your painting? I know it's a hard question.
It's the whole thing. It's the whole reason.
Okay.
The whole reason I paint landscape is it's just the wildness of it, and I just the love of it. And to me, I love being a land. We were talking with Gavin Way coming up here. Fred and I were talking about how it's so fun when you paint. You can kind of play God. You can take the town of Carbondale out. You can put in, you know, you don't have to put all the stuff that's there. You can imagine what it was like beforehand and put more just without the buildings, without the, just the mountains and the colors. I just think that that's a pretty neat thing to do.
You know, like when the indigenous people, the Ute people, the Nooch, as they call themselves, were here. So you can kind of go back. That's what I like about a good landscape painting. You don't see all the noise of our modern lives.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have a hard time as artists blocking out the noise of our modern lives, and it comes into their work. But both you guys I would call purist in the sense you're trying to portray something that's really precious to you and that you want to communicate to someone else. And that definitely is the case for both your paintings.
The shadows and the colors and... It's just wonderful.
Exactly. But what specifically, you talk about magic, this area we live in. What makes it magic? You've been in a lot of places. You've painted all over Colorado. What makes the word magic means different things to different people?
Because I remember the first time I came to this valley, I came in the summertime, I came over Independence Pass, I came in that direction. So we didn't, and I remember coming to Carbondale and not seeing Sopers until I turned around. And it literally took my breath away. It was amazing. And I think, you know, my kids are always giving me trouble saying that they're the true natives and I'm not. I say, yeah, but I moved here because I wanted to be here and I stayed here because this is where I want to be.
Right. You know, it's funny that when I first came here to check out whether I wanted to move here with a job with the Bureau of Land Management, same thing happened to me when I rounded that corner and saw Sopers in all its glory. It was like, wow.
Whoa, what is that?
Yeah, I want to live here, and I am, and I did, you know, and that was 30-something years ago.
Right.
So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So, Fred, what about you? What's the word magic? What makes us magic?
Well, you know, I live up by the trailhead at No Name, and so doing chores around my house, I lift my eyes up 1,700 feet to the cliffs, and the mother eagle is working her way down the edge of the cliff, and the creek's roaring down there, and the trees are just bursting forth with leaves, and the service berries are blossoming, and, you know, every moment is alive and magic. Like that, the drama of where we live, the vertical scale of where we live, with the huge peaks and the huge canyons, and the fact that nature is just right there, it's just right over there, you know, that just right up out of town, right up out of your house is nature, you know, that business of presenting it as it was before we did stuff with it. I have a 4x12 foot painting in the Glenwood Springs City Hall. That's Glenwood Canyon in the old days, before the railroad, before the road, in the old days. So it's a composite of three different spots in the canyon with the river in flood in the spring. But I wanted to show what it looked like before we started dividing it up or cutting it up or putting roads in it.
That's sort of what Mary's saying before.
Talking about drama.
Yeah.
That's a very dramatic place.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Is Fred's place?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a sanctuary for me. When I go there, I feel like I'm completely in a different world, and I get to go in his studio. I get to look at you always excitingly show me your new stuff, and that's really special to me, because, you know, to open yourself up like you do in your work, both of you, to the public, to expose everything and show them what you really feel makes you pretty vulnerable, doesn't it? I mean, really.
Well, I feel like it is, well, when you paint, you're kind of putting your soul out on the canvas, and you just kind of got to go with it. But I feel like I've had a deal, like it seems that every time I used to paint out at the Anschutz Ranch before Aspen Glen was there. I painted there for a long time, and I have a lot of paintings when the barn was there. And it was so great. I'd go out there, I got permission to go out there, and I'd go out there, and there was a cat and a couple of rabbits that were around there that would always be hanging out when I'd be out there painting. And the storms were so amazing, these amazing dramatic storms, and I'd be out there doing that. And then I also painted out at Wolfshin Ranch for a long time before that was developed. So it's kind of like you get this tie to the land, and then it really just wrenches you when you see getting developed. So you feel like even more driven to document it before it's gone.
And you bring up a good point. A lot of people need to be aware, if you're on public land or private land. If you're on private land, you need to ask permission. So you need to know where you are when you're out there painting or whatever you're doing. Which brings me to the question about public land. We're talking here right now about a very, to me, very spiritual thing, your connection to the land and to your soul and to what you do as an artist. But where the heck does public land fit into this? Whoever, which one of you wants to answer that? What's a big deal? So it's public land. So what if states take it over in the West?
I had a friend from Connecticut was out here visiting. And she said, we were looking at Wolfshin Ranch. We were sitting in the Iron Springs Hot Springs. She says, now who owns that land up there? And I said, you do. She goes, what do you mean I do? And I said, yeah, that's your land, and you're letting us, we all use it. And it is it's really amazing. I remember seeing National Geographic had a map, a huge map of public land. And you go like right Missouri, right the central, you see off from the east, there's no public land at all. But the west, it's almost all public land. And it's really, I think, an amazing treasure that we have, and we should respect it and get out there and take care of it.
Well, and Wallace Stegner's book, Beyond the 100th Meridian, was what really got me into wanting to help manage our public land because of that very fact that the West is different than the East. We have the mass amount of public land here. What does that mean to you, Fred?
Oh, gosh. The ranch where I grew up was surrounded by the Rio Grande National Forest. It was an inholding of a block of old homesteads.
Uh-huh.
And we were right against the South San Juan Wilderness.
Wow.
And so I was surrounded with public land and huge areas of public land all my life, really. But camping and traveling around the West and painting, it's been so valuable. It's so amazing to see how important the national parks and monuments are to everybody everywhere. I was part of an artist community called Oracle north of Tucson, And I lived with a painter named Elizabeth Ott, and we used to do several painting trips a year all over the West. And we'd go from national park to national park and find places to, you know, to paint, where we could camp and paint. And we met people from all over the world. And, you know, we'd sell a painting right off the tailgate and we could camp for another 2 weeks. And so it was fabulous. And you got to see how important the parks were to people, because we weren't urban people. But you could see people from all these cities who were just blown away by being out there. People from other nations.
And I think a lot of people don't even realize that the value of public land, and that it really and truly it belongs to all Americans. And there are groups of people out there who would like to change that. And there were when Teddy Roosevelt created a lot of the public land and started this whole process against the powers that be, who were vicious in their criticism of him. And we seem to see that same kind of cycle coming around. So I guess the question I'll ask you next is, we're talking about a spiritual connection, and how does public land fit into that? I mean, it comes across in your work, the land you're painting, whether it's private or public. But how can other artists connect to that same spiritual connection that you two have?
Huh, that's an interesting question. I'd say that I feel that when I'm out painting, it's a natural extension of what's going on. I think that Americans, what am I going to say here? The way you look, where Americans look at the land is something that they always look at the land as something that's very, very much a part of the character of what America is. The landscape is such a big deal to what forms our national psyche. Part of is the land.
Right.
Yet most Americans aren't near it. You know, I'm always amazed when you're out in there somewhere and you see no one, and you know there are places like, you know, New Jersey, New York, places like that where you can't go anywhere without having people right on top of you. And here we have all this land, where you've got all this place where you can get rejuvenated by it. But I think the land is a big part of the American character, and that it's like you think of the wide open spaces as being very much a part of who we are. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what that does for you, but I think it's a real strength for the culture.
So let me throw a monkey wrench in here. We have a lot of advertisement, oh yeah, this is the place to live, and then Outdoor Magazine puts something in, the last 10 great places we'd like to ruin by telling you about
them.
That's right. So we have Hanging Lake is a good example
right.
of that. So what do we do? I mean, do we say, like a lot of people tend to, well, I'm here now, so nobody else is welcome. But we're going to have a huge influx of people here over the next 10 years, the next decade or two. How does that influence your view towards public land and what you do on public land? Do we welcome everybody that comes? We say, oh, it'd be nice if you went back home where you came from. What do we do about this, Fred and Mary?
Well, it's like visit but don't stay.
But we did.
But the power of nature is so built into us, because, you know, what we get from painting is that it's a right brain, 100% in the present, direct experience of something that's there. And we're going, wow, because there's stuff you can't make up, you know. And so we get to be there to see it and to record it in some way and then share it with other people. The thing about being out in nature is it's the thing they don't teach us in school, is that who we are is not our thoughts. Who we are is not our mind or the left side of our brain. That's one thing we've got. But art happens on the right side of the brain the same way dancing, skiing, kayaking, everything else of that sort happens, that it isn't thoughts. And so when you're out in nature, your opinions about how stuff's happening in life, whatever's going on in your personal life, all of a sudden is in perspective, because you realize you're part of something that's huge and alive, that's way bigger and, you know, way bigger than we are.
You're not in charge.
One little part
yeah.
of it.
You're not in charge.
You know,
yeah.
And so the nourishment comes from recognizing who we are as part of something way bigger and alive and built to work. And you see it happening around you. The lucky thing about getting paid to be out there in nature is we see how complex and interconnected it is. And we see how varied and alive it all is, you know, just by sitting there.
So this love for Mother Nature and the land, how does that translate for you and Mary to any activism on part of public lands?
Well, We were we had the Garfield Legacy Project a few years ago that was trying to do a tax for open land preservation, and it was amazing to be involved with that. That was Martha Cochran, Clark Anderson, John Levy, people like that were working on it. It was wonderful, but it was I was so blown away because I thought that there was more support for it, and there really, I mean, we got defeated soundly, but I thought that it was we had more. There were more people were more aware of that, were more interested in preserving land and conservation easements than they right. really were. It was very much of an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, the last, for land's sake, had Martha here. I mean, Mary, she was for a while there, for a long period of time, was the executive director of the Aspen Valley yeah. Land Trust, which has set aside a lot of open land. So, you know, we try to inform the public there on that show of what they can do to bring about conservation easements on land that they care about. You know, how about you, Fred? How does it translate into activism for on behalf of public lands and land in general?
In terms of activism, it's only in occasional, you know, we all end up donating paintings to good causes, or we end up doing posters for good events and good causes. And so in that way, we get to serve. It's still that reminder of the livingness of it all. That's what we get to do.
Well, what does it mean to be a public artist? Because we mentioned at the start of the show that you have more landscape murals, public art, than any other single person in the United States. What does it mean to be a public artist to you, first, Fred?
Well, it's art that belongs to everyone. It's art that improves and decorates the community, but it's also art that reminds the community of how magic it is, how beautiful it is.
And what happens when I hate to even mention this, but one of your murals was painted over recently across right next to the Forest Service. How does that make you feel?
Well, it's always, you know, a loss and a little bit of a shock, but at the same time, it's wonderful that every mural has its own lifetime, every piece of public art, and they do good for as long as they're there, you know, and then you just keep making more of them.
And there's a new public that's going to have their art.
That's right.
That's right.
There's always a new public, isn't there, coming in? People,
yeah.
Kids are born that we hope have a sense of appreciation for public land as well. So, Mary, you're going to be featured here soon in July 2016, a show called Ode to Aspen at the Red Brick Art Center in Aspen. And the show runs through the month of July, but the opening is July the 7th from, I think, 5 to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more information at the Red Brick. You can call 970-429-2777. Again, 970-429-2777 if you'd like to participate in that. Tell us a little bit about that, if you could, Mary.
Well, we're meeting tomorrow on it. I think it'll be great. It's because I have a lot of paintings of around Aspen, but not so much the buildings in Aspen. I have more of the, like, I'd have a couple from Maroon Bells, which is I always thought that was kind of hokey to go up there because everybody was up there. That's an amazing spot to paint. Painted up there last summer a couple of times. And just the places around there and all the mountains and the I do have a couple of street scenes. It's just kind of more it's supposed to be Aspen. And I've got a lot of Soper's ones and things of that sort that I can't help having.
Oh, I love your Aspen, your Soper's paintings. Aspen, though, you know, the Maroon Bells are iconic. And I've seen more people up there painting or taking photographs. And that's a good example of public land being used to the benefit of art. So I think, you know, we
that's well managed too.
It is well managed. That's correct. Fred, what about you? What have you got planned for this summer?
Well, I have a big mural season coming up. I had a grant to fix some of my 25 and 30 year old paintings down in the San Luis Valley. So I get to complete a 14 by 60 foot water serpent.
Wow.
Right off the bat this coming week. And then I have a Virgin of Guadalupe mural to redo in the town of Antonito. And then I'm fixing up one of my old murals in Leadville that I did in 1990 that's held up at 10,000 feet until now, but it needs fixing desperately. and then a brand new mural for Leadville.
Well, now when you go and fix those, do you change the painting at all, or are you just kind of redoing
this it? This one I'm going to completely repaint, essentially, because it's in such bad shape.
Really?
It's old south-facing soft brick, but it's four famous ladies of Leadville right across from the Tabor Opera House.
Whoa.
And so we're going to power wash it and repair the wall, and then I'll essentially repaint it.
Good.
So let me ask you quickly, which one of you wants to talk about what your favorite painting is? Do you have one that you really grabbed you and kept holding?
One of the favorite ones I have is the one I called Fails Bales. And it's of Bill Fails' Bales up on towards Redstone. And it was something, because that was a culmination of the entire summer I painted hay bales. I got into a hay bale thing. Okay. And I'd have people give me alerts, you know, the hay bales are down in Newcastle now, hurry up, run down there. But it was... It was the culmination of all the, it's like maybe 10 paintings I did, or maybe more than that, of this over the summer, and I culminated in Fails Bales, and it was just a beautiful, the light was perfect, and it was one of those gorgeous Soper's days. It was September 30th, I remember, before going to see the Wild Magnolias at the 3rd Street Center. I sat out there and painted. So that's my favorite.
Fred, what about you?
I think my Glenwood painting, where you go to the post office of the Flat Tops Wilderness.
That's my, one of mine, too.
Because it's that view from the top of Blair Mountain down to the Blair Lakes and the South Fork of the White and you know, Trapper's Lake and the Marveen Peaks. And it's a local place, but we don't get to see very often.
All right, it's time to sign off here. And I want to thank you, Mary and Fred, for appearing on For Land's Sake today. This is Bill Kite wishing you the very best until our next show on May the 31st here on KDNK at 4:30.